This week, we are rerunning the opera series that aired here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe in the spring. The opera about which we are speaking today corresponds to the one that is being performed tonight at the Santa Fe Opera, which is on the web at santafeopera.org. They can also be reached by phone at 505-986-5900 or toll-free at 800-280-4654. We're talking about the five operas in this season of the Santa Fe Opera, and our guest today is Desiree Mays, international opera lecturer and storyteller, and author of the book Opera Unveiled, now in its 16th year. She speaks every night at the Preview Buffet at the Opera. Welcome, Desiree, to the Radio Cafe.
Hello, Mary Charlotte. It's good to be back.
We're talking today about the opera Carmen by Georges Bizet, and this is an opera which one is tempted to think that everybody knows this story, but I have to admit I've never seen it, even though it's been performed in Santa Fe and everywhere else on the planet.
Now you have a treat in store.
I know.
Though you're not actually going to see what everybody expects to see. Carmen is typically produced as an opera of great spectacle, of gypsies in flamenco costumes playing castanets, and then the magnificent bullfighting scene at the end. This production would be a little different. This director is much more interested in people. It's more of updating, if you like, to our time, more of a dramatic interpretation. So we'll talk a little about that as we get into it, but maybe we should start out with the music everybody knows from the overture that gets us in the right mood for Carmen, perhaps.
Okay, so we're going to start with music. And if you don't know that, ladies and gentlemen, you've been living under a rock. Exactly.
In some context or another. I mean, that music's out there.
Yeah, cartoons.
Yes, exactly. I mean, this is music that does lend itself to that, which is great. It's sort of upbeat and it's fun. And we'll get to the tragedy. There is tragedy in it.
So Carmen, passionate gypsy woman who's mantra is freedom.
Absolutely, yeah. And that really is what this opera is about. It's about freedom coming up against. She meets a man who doesn't really understand that she wants total freedom. He expects that if they're having this passionate affair, she's going to belong to him. But she doesn't want that. She wants complete freedom. In fact, her very first aria, she tells him that. When we first meet Carmen, she appears and she sees this young soldier, Don Jose, who's standing to one side. Everybody else on stage is riveted by her, but he's nearly not bothered. He's cleaning his gun. He doesn't pay any attention to her, which, of course, attracts her. And she sings the incredible Habanera, which we might play a little of. This, it turns out, is a piece of music that is based on a Cuban rhythm by Iradier. It's not really a truly Bizet piece at all. Bizet also is a Frenchman, not a Spaniard, and that's another sort of layer to this whole piece. But she tells Don Jose her philosophy from the very beginning. Love is a wild bird that no one can tame. Love can fascinate, love can tease. For just how long can't be foretold, for love's a thing no force can hold. Love has many forms and shapes. Each day it wears a new disguise. Isn't that the truth?
Yes, indeed.
So we know exactly where she's coming from right at the beginning. So maybe we could play that track. This is Carmen's entrance, and here the singer is Teresa Berganza.
Si lui convient de refuser
That's another. I mean, if ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't seen Carmen, at least you've heard it. I mean,
yeah,
these
you need
are
to
all
go
very
see
familiar
it.
Pieces. You have to go see it at the Santa
right.
Fe Opera. But this is a beautiful piece. And who's singing this? What wonderful voices.
Yeah, this is Teresa Berganza. It's a wonderful recording, actually, with Placido Domingo when he was still a tenor, a young Placido Domingo. His voice is now deepened, and he's singing more baritone roles. I doubt he would sing this one again. And Elena Cotruba sings, and Cheryl Milne is the toreador who sings the famous toreador song, the conductor Claudio Abbado with the London Symphony. So it's a really super recording. Actually, the opera shop, Mary Charlotte, on campus at the opera has all these wonderful recordings. People should know about that.
Yeah.
The shop does a wonderful job, and a lot of them are online. You can go to santafeopera.org opera shop, and you'll be able to get these recordings. It really helps to hear some of them in advance, and I think this is a good example of where that might help. You asked why I mispronounced Don Jose. Right? It's into a cultural thing here. Bizet is French. And
the opera is in French.
And the opera is in French, not in Spanish.
That's why he's called Don José.
Exactly. So that's the reason why it's not that we're mispronouncing it around here. So.
Right.
So that's the introduction of Carmen. There are two incredible women in this opera, one who is the free gypsy and the other the country girl, sweet, faithful, conservative, who's in love with this Don José. But
they really are counterpoints to each other. I mean, you could call it the Madonna, whore, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. The light and the dark, and in the two sides of the coin. Though there was a very good reason for...
Or free and repressed.
Yes,
I mean, there's a lot of
everything. I mean, it works well. She's a balance. But Micaela is an interesting character. She loves Don José. She is innocent. But she's got a lot of courage. I mean, she's going to go for what she wants. She goes off to the mountains where the gypsy hangout is, which is dangerous because they've posted people with guns and they shoot on sight. She goes there to see him, to plead with him to return to her later in the opera when he has run off with Carmen, and she stands her ground. So Micaela is a force to be reckoned with.
And she's the girl next door.
She's the girl next door.
And she's the one that Don José's mom wants
to
marry.
Yes, yes. In fact, we might just jump ahead here and play next the duet between Don José and Micaela. There was another reason for putting Micaela into this opera. The opera was to premiere at the Opéra Comique. That was where the contract was with that opera house. But that opera house was a straight family house. They couldn't have, at that time, no violence was allowed. You couldn't show a fight on stage, and you definitely could not show a death on stage, which is how this opera ends. So the management did everything in their power to change it, to have Bizet agree to changes, but he wouldn't. He absolutely wouldn't. So the librettist...
And his singers wouldn't.
That's his two leading singers, only the Carmen and the Don José. The others were happy to go along with the management. So the whole thing was sort of set up in a very bad light, and when the opera premiere did happen, it actually failed miserably. But the way that the librettist thought they could get around some of this problem was to introduce the character of Micaela. She would be the G-rated, the family person that would be a safe character to balance this wild Carmen. So she was actually brought into the story for a very different reason, not for dramatic reasons, though it works that way, but to placate the opera theater management. So we can hear a little of that duet between Don José and Micaela. She has come, and she tells him she brings a kiss from his mother, and can she share it with him? And of course, he's only too happy to. So he sings about baiser de ma mère, and he's having this kiss with this girl, but it's really from his mother. You know, none of us are that naive. So let's play a little of that with Placido Domingo and Elena Cotrubas.
Abaissez-vous,
So we're talking about the opera Carmen, and one of the themes in this opera, besides freedom, is this whole question of fate. And Carmen, the wild, free gypsy, also knows that her only master is destiny.
That's right. It's a wonderful dimension to this opera where she seems to be so free, but in actual fact, she is controlled, she believes, by fate and destiny, as maybe we all are. How much freedom do we have within that scenario? It's a very interesting question. It also comes up with the interpretation of the music, Mary Charlotte. You know, the conductor has to stay with the score. He cannot change it. He is not free to rewrite or change it as he feels like it. But within the written notes, there is freedom in how long the note is held or the pacing of it, the coloring of it, the tempo, all of these things. So to me, that always is the answer of how can we be free when we are destined to do A, B, C, and D. There is within the structure, there is a freedom. And that, I think, is what's happening here. So for all her singing about freedom, she plays the cards at one point and she sees, and you'll hear this in this little theme, she sees death. First me, then him. You can't evade the truth. The cards never lie. If fate saved you a happy page within its book, your fate is happiness. But if your time has come and you are evil starred, if there is death in store, the unrelenting card will appear once more. It's straight melodrama. It's wonderful. But this is a theme, and it comes throughout the opera. It's right in the very opening in the overture. When she first meets Don Jose and he ignores her, she throws a flower at him, and the fate theme is heard. When she turns over the cards, it's a little five-note theme that haunts the piece. So let's play that. That, of course, it comes then back in full force at the very end. The theme of fate from Carmen.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the theme of fate. And when you know, when you hear that, you know.
You know, you might be in trouble, and it depends on which page fate has opened for you, a happy or a sad page.
Exactly. Or which card has been turned up.
Yes, yes.
Now, this style of opera contains something that we don't that often see, although it does come up from time to time, on the stage of the Santa Fe Opera, and that is spoken dialogue as opposed to sung dialogue.
That's right.
So to speak.
Yeah, it happens a lot in operetta, of course, with The Merry Widow and pieces like that. You know, the characters talk to one another and then they burst into song. So you have dialogue, song, dialogue, song. And at this theater, again, the opera comique, it was required. There had to be dialogue. If you think of it like a musical, that's how musicals are done. There's a bit of dialogue and then there's song. So pieces like Porgy and Bess, which was originally a musical and is often performed on the opera stage, but there are long passages of dialogue. Les Misérables is the same thing. That's now making the transition into opera, but there's sections of dialogue. And Bizet had to do that. So at this point, I'm going to play a little B in French, but it doesn't matter. There will be super titles to help you.
Now, the way the dialogue is spoken isn't realistic. It's still very sort of stylized and dramatic.
It is. It's stylized. And you'll hear that. And it's, as I said, spoken in French. Here, Don Jose has had to imprison Carmen because she caused a big row in the cigarette factory and she got in a fight and slashed another girl's face. So he's supposed to be holding a prisoner, but of course she talks him out of that. And just before she leaves, she tells him, I will be true to you. You have done done me a favor, so I will do you a favor. Come to the tavern at Lila's Pastia, and we'll meet up there, and then she escapes. So let's hear that section, the dialogue, where he says, no, I can't do that, but he's already hooked. She's thrown this flower at him. He's lost his heart to her, though at this point he doesn't quite realize it. And the moment he can, he goes to Lila's Pastia. Let's hear that section.
Nous ne sommes pas ici pour dire des balivernes. Il faut aller à la prison.
Tu feras ce que je te demande. Tu le feras parce que tu m'aimes.
Moi?
Eh oui, tu m'aimes.
Ne me parlez plus, tu m'entends? Je te défends de me parler.
Vous me défendez de parler? Très bien, je ne parlerai plus.
So that gives you a sense of the seduction of Carmen, especially in this recording. It's lovely. So there is these dialogue sections that go into the music. Lila's Pastia is typically seen as a gypsy den in most productions, where there's a wonderful quartet where the gypsies all dance and she's letting her hair down. In this production, it's going to be very interesting. This director, as I said, wants to do something different, much more realism in this piece. So he's focusing on the smuggling aspect of these gypsies. They're gypsies, but they're smugglers. And he's not really departing from the libretto in doing this. There are references to smuggling throughout, and that's exactly what they will be. So in this particular section of the opera, Lila's Pastia, it's going to be a bar in somewhere like a Mexican city. It could be Juarez. And one of those glitzy, neon-lit bars where all hell breaks loose, and she... is the cabaret act.
I mean, this is an opera characterized by alcohol, tobacco, knife fights, bullfights.
Oh, yeah. The sitcoms we're watching now got it from Carmen. And you can see why the theater was pretty upset at the time. They couldn't show this stuff. This was the beginning of verismo in opera, which is getting away from the kings and queens and gods and goddesses that typically composers had been composing about. Now they're talking about real people. But the way this opera's been done, it's always been done as spectacle. So they managed to harken back to that period. But the story, if you take away the frills and you're left with the story, it's a tough story. It's about this young man who is an innocent in a way and becomes a victim of his own obsession for this gypsy whom he's not about to give up.
Now, this is the late 19th century, and that's where you see in other operas, too, a kind of real theatrical storytelling happening.
That's right. Puccini goes in this direction, Leoncavallo, and Mascagni. This sort of verismo, which very loosely translated is realism, moving away from those old mythic stories to something more realistic and contemporary, of course. So Don Jose, anyway, he goes to her, he can't resist, and she takes him to her room, and they drink manzanilla sherry, and she peels oranges, and she wants to dance for him, and he's completely at her mercy. And the two of them are about to make love when, lo and behold, the trumpet sounds from his camp, and he says, Carmen, I have to go, I can't ignore the trumpet, and she is totally furious at this. At this great moment where they're going to get together, he decides he's got to answer the bugle call. So she really dresses him down. She says, go then, I don't care. But he says, I can't go. And he takes the flower that he's kept, her rose, out of his jacket, and he sings to her of his love for her. And this is the very beautiful tenor aria called the Flower Aria, sung by the fabulous Placido Domingo in this recording.
And that was the Flower Aria from Carmen, sung by Placido Domingo. And we're talking with Desiree Mays, author of Opera Unveiled. And this is an opera where we've talked about the two women who represent kind of two poles of womanhood, the girl next door and the wild, free,
sexy
sexual. And there's also two men who offset each other too. It's almost like a love quadrangle.
Yes, in a way it is. Don José is a young soldier. He's very naive. He's from the country. He's completely swept away by Carmen, and he is truly in love with her at this point. But then she meets the toreador. He comes to the bar and he sings, and she's fascinated by his courage, his daring, his edginess, because he really matches her much better. And one has a sense, yes, these two, if they get together, they'll have this wild fling and then it'll be over and they'll both move on. So that's exactly what happens, of course. But Don José is on the side, murderous now. He is so angry. He is so jealous. Jealousy takes over, and he would kill the matador if he could. But at this point, I thought I'd play the piece that everybody truly does know, the Toreador song from Carmen, and this is sung by Cheryl Milnes when he first appears in the opera.
C'est jour de fête, le cirque est plein du tombeau. Les spectateurs perdent la tête, les spectateurs s'interpellent à notre cas. Apostrophe, crise et tapage, poussée jusque à la fureur, car c'est Allô,
Now, ladies and gentlemen, everybody knows that song.
I know. This is easy
this is
listening
like,
opera.
It's like Shakespeare. It's like, oh, I've heard that phrase before.
Yeah, yeah. You have to go and see this opera and link all those songs up together.
Now, I think it's so interesting that Bizet not only wrote this opera in French, he never even went to Spain. And something that is so archetypally Spanish in the popular imagination is just a total imagination of Spain.
Yes, it is. And this was very popular at the time. You know, audiences loved exotic settings. So that's where they would set these operas. Puccini did Road to Turandot. It's about China. He'd never been to China. But for Bizet, he based this opera on a book by Prosper Mérimée, a Frenchman. So he came to it in a French style. The whole thing is very French, even though the setting is in Spain. That happens a lot. But as we said, the opera will be sung in French, and that's the sense that you want. So when this director came, Stephen Lawless, to how am I going to present Carmen yet again, because we've all seen it and we're used to the spectacle, and why go back? I mean, my easy answer to that is because when people ask me to do lectures and someone says Carmen, my first thought is, again, Carmen. And then I go back to Carmen, I play the music, and I'm hooked all over again. That's perhaps the greatest test. If the music will do it to you over and over again, it's like listening to a pop song that you love. The more you hear it, the more you want to hear it. And that applies.
And there's also, as we've talked about in just about every opera we've ever talked about on this show, there are universal themes that make it fresh for every generation.
Exactly. We can identify as teenagers, you know, with wanting the freedom that Carmen has. To what degree we take it, sexually or otherwise, is up to the individual. But where do we fall between those roles? You know, between the country girl who's very naive and her heart's in the right place, she loves him, and Carmen who just wants a wild, passionate affair. I mean, I suppose we all want a bit of both, if you think about it. So it's very relevant. So this this director, as I said, is taking this approach of there being smugglers. It'll be very realistic. There won't be all the flamenco and that aspect to it. In fact, he's setting the opera probably in Mexico. He wanted in a Latin American country. Mexico would be good. It needs to be in a Spanish-speaking country, country that has a bullring, and they still have bullfights in Juarez, for instance, because the final scene is in the bullring. So the setting then now is not in Spain, but in, think, Mexico City. So what about the soldiers? Who are these soldiers? Who is Don Jose? Who is his regiment? They are the border guards. So it'll be very interesting. And then when she invites him to Lila's Pastia, this bar, it's a sort of a sleazy Juarez bar. In fact, I just talked to the people in the El Paso opera down the road. Next year they're doing Carmen. I said, well, why don't you do it in the bullring in Juarez? Can you imagine how incredible that would be? Clean up the sand, put fresh sand down.
Yeah, right.
And we'll have a real sense of that, because this year the opera is using projections. All the big opera companies now are using projections. And for us, film scenes on the set are really challenging because of our light, our day-night.
Are they moving images or still images?
They're both. They'll be moving and still, I understand. But that'll be a challenge. I mean, it has to come late in the show when it's dark, right? But at the end, which is the bullfight, at the very end of the opera, there will be scenes of the bullfight and the bulls, which I think will make it very present. And the violence of the piece will suddenly come to the fore. That's exciting. And this is something new that the opera company is now taking on. I mean, congratulations. It's a real challenge with our particular outdoor house.
Very, very interesting. So let's talk a little bit more about the bullfighter and Carmen. Escamillo and Carmen, they are kind of soulmates in their passion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you think about it, maybe Don Jose and Micaela, the girl next door, are much more suited for each other.
Right, right.
And that makes, of course, Don Jose all the more jealous.
Yes, yes.
Now, there is a duet between Escamillo and Carmen.
Yes, Carmen and Don Jose get in a major row over Escamillo, and then Micaela shows up and she tells Don Jose that his mother is dying, and now he's torn. Does he stay with Carmen and continue fighting with her, or does he go to his mother's deathbed? He goes to his mother. Carmen's delighted because now she can go to Escamillo, and immediately she does. And the final act, then, we see her dressed up as the leading lady on the arm of the famous Toreador. It's a marvelous moment, that entrance, the entrance of the Toreadors. And they've kept fairly close to the reality of how bullfights function. But there's a very sweet, tender little section here that you don't expect that Bizet wrote for Escamillo and Carmen as he's about to go into the bullring and possibly death, as that always was the case. So you hear here he says the prayers of the Toreador for forgiveness before he goes into the bullring, and then he comes out to her and he pledges the ear of the bull to her, and she becomes a sort of the leading lady of the entire bullfight, which he loves. But it's a tender moment, and it's very brief. Let's hear that next.
To say the music in this opera is just, I can't stop just repeating it. It's amazing.
It's marvelous, isn't it? Yes. So go straight to the box office, call them and get your tickets.
So what happens next? We're getting toward the tragic ending.
This is near the ending. Yes, he goes off. Escamillo goes to fight the bulls, and Carmen is warned by her friends that Don Jose has been seen in the crowd. And she says, I'm not afraid. I'll see him. So when everyone's gone into the bullfight, and there's a marvelous juxtaposition here, as Carmen and Don Jose have this final confrontation, it's intercepted, is that the word, by the crowd who are roaring support for Escamillo inside the bullring. You hear the two, but they meet, and he is absolutely furious with her. He asks her to go with him. She refuses, and they get in this row. She says, let me passe, and he won't let her pass. He won't let her go into the bullring, and that the argument escalates. You'll hear this. We'll play this final section, and so finally she takes off the ring that he gave her, and she flings it at him, and you'll hear the word, tiens. Take it, there it is. And that's the last straw for him. He moves in and he kills her, and the fate theme comes back in all its glory. So there's a wonderful point the director made about this, about how incompatible Carmen and Don Jose really are. And this may ring bells for people when we date the wrong people, you know, we don't always see the light. He talked a little bit about the gifts they give one another. Carmen gave Don Jose a flower, a thing of beauty that's momentary. It doesn't last. It last, be beautiful a little while, then it will die, as her love did. Whereas he gives her a ring, which is a gesture of permanence, that he wants to be with her forever, but that's not going to be. So we could maybe just finish these wonderful excerpts on this recording with Teresa Berganza and Placido Domingo singing the final scene from Carmen by Georges Bizet.
Mon âme, je l'aurais perdu pour que toi, pour que tu t'en ailles à faire, en te sabrarie de moi. La personne finira pas, Carmen, c'est moi que tu suivras.
Non, non, jamais.
Je suis là de te menacer.
Où laisse-moi passer?
Pour la dernière fois, dis-moi, veux-tu me suivre?
Non, non! Cette bague, autrefois, tu me l'avais donnée. Tiens!
The curtain falls.
I know. The end.
The end.
Today, operas just sort of fade off on a few notes, and this time they really ended properly.
With a bang.
With a bang. Bizet was a marvelous composer. He wrote another number of operas. The Perfisches, which we did here last year, a little while ago, was his. But his was a tragic life. He had a hard time making his way, and this was his big moment, Carmen at the opera, and he ran into all this opposition. And tragically, he died. So many of these opera composers died in their 30s. During the third month of the run of Carmen, during the third act, when Carmen is reading the cards about fate, the singer apparently in that performance, she suddenly turned to the audience and said, Bizet's dead.
And it was the exact moment of his
death. It was the exact moment of his death. So he never knew of the fame of this extraordinary opera, which is now one of the top five operas of all time.
And it became successful right around the time that he died. It was really starting to take off.
It
became a very successful opera, even in its time. It didn't have to wait two generations.
No, that's right. It did, and he wasn't to know it. So that is another little tragedy in this opera. We should talk briefly perhaps about the singers. We have two Carmen, so people should see this twice. The wonderful Ana Maria Martinez will be playing Carmen in August, and Daniela Mack, who comes from Argentina, will sing it in July. So it would be interesting to see these two ladies. They will have different interpretations. Don José is sung by Roberto de Blasio, Escamillo by a Lithuanian singer, Kostas Smoriganis, and the conductor is Rory MacDonald. So there's Carmen. Come and see it.
Come and see it indeed. Carmen, see it. So there's a lot going on at the opera, which we want to let people know about. First of all, the opera has raised a lot of money to do a big expansion. What's going on?
That's the big news of this summer, actually. The fact that the opera board, an incredible board, has got together with Charles McKay, the general director, and all of the production people to develop an extraordinary undertaking to completely revamp the backstage and parts of the front of the house. We did the front of the house years ago. That's now fabulous. But the conditions for the singers, this tiny dressing rooms, communal showers, and things like that are really unacceptable in this day and age. That all completely needs to be redone. So that's one of the big jobs they're planning to do. Everybody will be happy to hear there are going to be many more toilets. That's always a complaint. Is there long enough to go to the bathroom in the intermission? That's going to be taken care of. Things like the opera shop is going to double in size. It's going to move across the entryway. It'll be much larger because that's been very successful. The paint shop will be enlarged, the costume shops. Up to now, they're all sort of doubling up in space, and it's very cramped. In fact, the press conference was very interesting in the spring. They put all the press in the very cramped principal's dressing room, and I promise you, you couldn't talk to one another. It was so tight. And all the singers, the big-name singers, you know, they go in, they do their show, and then they have to clear out for the next singer to come in. It's very primitive. So this is all going to be done, and I must say the opera has done an amazing job. This is going to cost $35 million.
Good heavens.
Over the course of 3 years. And the building will begin at the end of this season. When the curtain falls at the end of this summer season, they start working. The amazing thing is that $24.3 million has already been raised, mainly through this wonderful board, and now it's going out to the public. So as people go to the opera, bear this in mind. I mean, this is an expensive art form, but when this renovation is done, this opera house will be state-of-the-art by any standards, by any opera house on earth. They'll also be able to talk, for instance, to include the projections. They now don't have the capability to do that. They'll have it this summer, but that's something we've needed to do. And in five new productions, the demands are extraordinary. And this, Mary Charlotte, at a time when many opera companies are going under.
Yeah,
that's the amazing thing. This company is going from strength to strength with a very strong direction and management and wonderful team players and advisors. So there'll be a lot of employment for people in New Mexico in this job over 3 years. And working up there, I promise you, is great fun. I love every moment I spend up there in the summer. So that's something to look forward to.
And you spend a lot of time there in the summers because you do the preview buffets.
Yes, I'm there for the every night for the preview buffet. Is a way to go to the opera and be mentally in the right place and properly fed beforehand. Because on the opera grounds, they have this beautiful Florence Dapples Pavilion where nearly 200 people can dine, a lovely dinner with wine, and I come up with dessert and I tell the story and give a little background on the opera every night. So that's something to do. The other advantage is, of course, that instead of rushing from town trying to get into the car park in time for the show, you're parked in a good position ahead of time. And by the time you get to the theater, you're ready for the experience. It used to be we had the luxury of preparing all day to go to the opera. Now we all rush from work, and you have to leave work behind. You have to leave it in the car park to get into your seat and to be ready for that performance. So the preview buffets do that beautifully. But if you can't make it for the buffet, which is a couple of hours ahead of curtain, you can, if you have a ticket to the show, go to the prelude talks. These are up near the box office in Stearin Hall. They're free to anybody with a ticket. They are presented by my colleague Oliver Present.
Who's fabulous.
And that's 2 hours before. If a show is at 8, at 6 and 7, he will give a half-hour presentation. Go at 6 and hear his talk and then tailgate in the car park, have something to eat, and go to the show. So you have those two options. That's free. The preview buffets sell out, so you would need to call the box office 986-5900 to reserve if you want to come to the preview buffet, and I'll see you there.
Desiree Mays, thank you so much for being with us.
Pleasure. Fun to be here, Mary Charlotte.
We've been talking to Desiree Mays, international opera lecturer and storyteller, and author of the book Opera Unveiled. She speaks every night at the preview buffet at the opera. The Santa Fe Opera is on the web at santafeopera.org, and the phone number is 800-280-4654, and the local number is 505-986-5900.